Good morning, everybody in the world here. This is Tom Harris calling to you over Skype. Take two. Good Lord, that was a mess. Good morning, everybody. This is Tom Harris speaking to you from Chicago, Illinois. Beautiful Chicago, Illinois, where it is snowing at the moment. I did talk about that a little bit last week, that it didn't seem to me that winter was quite over yet. And this week, it hasn't been as cold as it was last week. But it is still, nonetheless, it has been snowing. We've got a little powder snow today. Beautiful, actually, out. It's, you know, it is the sort of beautiful powder snow that kind of accumulates on every little twig of every little tree. But the tree buds are swelling, folks. The trees know that it's almost spring. So we do have some of that going on here. Anyway, it is a beautiful day here. Yesterday, we actually had a bit of sun. It's funny. You know, how wildly wrong all of the weather forecasters have been in Chicago this week. I had somebody come up to me at work on, I think it was on Thursday. And she said to me, I can't believe we're supposed to get 9 inches of snow tonight. And I'm looking out the window and there's puddles of water on the ground, like liquid water, not ice. And it's like, I don't know about that. It seems a little too warm to me. Oh, no, well, that's what the weather people said, you know. And in the morning, when I woke up in the morning, how much snow do you think there was? Well, I'm not going to say there was none. We had about a quarter inch of snow overnight. Yeah, 9 inches of snow, really. You know, and it just goes to show, you know, weather forecasting, for all of the technological advantages we have, is not as advanced in an exact a science as we would like it to be. There's a lot of variation. And we're going to talk today about global warming a little bit, because I know I promised that I was going to talk about that last week. And we never got around to it. We actually ended up talking about graveyards with our good friend Fagash Lil, which was brilliant. You know, and we love when Lil calls in. But you know, didn't quite get to all the stuff that I was going to talk about last week. So we are going to talk a little bit about it this week. And the reason why I bring it up at all is because I keep hearing the sort of the same line of argument from friends of mine, acquaintances of mine, people who do other podcasts that I listen to, who are not terribly scientifically literate. And their argument goes something like this. We know that scientists say that global warming is happening. We can see the rise in sea levels threatening island nations like Kiribati and the Maldives. So we know that the oceans are rising. We know that the ice caps are shrinking. The measurements are very clear. Glaciers are melting all over the world. But it snowed in my town last year, so that means that global warming is a myth. That is sort of the basic logic that you get from these people who are denying global warming. There's a couple other arguments they use, and one of the arguments is, well, now, they don't use the term global warming anymore. They use the term climate change, and there are reasons for that. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. But the notion of, well, it snowed last winter in my town, therefore global warming is a myth, that's not a scientific observation. You're looking at anecdotal evidence and not understanding that your anecdotal evidence is completely irrelevant to any kind of scientific inquiry. Let's talk about science in general for a moment. Science is not something that deals in absolutes. Very, very rarely do you get an absolute statement from scientists. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of data out there that would support this idea of anthropogenic climate change. And the people who generally argue against it are people who have a political axe to grind, people who have an emotional need to not believe it because it would upset them too much. And they don't actually follow the facts. The other side of this is that most people are not scientifically literate, that they can look at the data and not know what they're looking at. And I understand that what I'm saying here might sound to some people like an argument from authority. Oh, well, these are scientists. You should believe everything they say. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. Science is a system of building consensus. It's not a doctrine. It's not like religion where you have a dogma that you have to adhere to. Well, if you don't believe this, then you're not a true scientist. You know, it's not that sort of a system. And I've talked about this on my podcast before. I don't think I've ever talked about it on the live show. But you never know. You know, I may have done. I don't remember what I talked about last week, much less, you know, what I talked about a year ago. Oh, incidentally, speaking of a year ago, big congratulations to Paul Edwards, who is, as of this week, has been with United Kingdom Radio for an entire year. So fantastic. Congratulations, Paul. Do we want to mark that landmark here? Got a comment coming in here, looks like from Wayne. Tom, so no snowpocalypse then this past week? Nope, no snowpocalypse this past week. I'm thinking, honestly, Wayne, I'm thinking that we're not going to get a lot of snow now. Because I'm seeing that, you know, it is noticeably warmer. I talked about that change in the weather, that, you know, kind of that the transition from winter to spring. And I can kind of feel it when it happens. You know, it hasn't quite happened yet, but I do think it's going to happen sometime in the next week or so, because there's a noticeable difference in the way the air feels when you go outside. It's still cold out, but it feels different somehow. And I don't mean in a kind of a mystical woo-woo kind of way. I think that I'm actually feeling something real, and it's not my imagination. And I know that I can see the tree buds swelling, and I think that there's a different smell in the air. You know, I think it's subtle cues like that that make me think, oh, well, you know, it's no longer winter. You know, and I think I'm picking up on that. I think it's a matter of perception and not a matter of guesswork. But, you know, that's just me. And who am I? I don't have any kind of training in, you know, changing of seasons. I'm an enthusiastic amateur reader, as far as issues of scientists go. Anyway, getting back to what I was talking about, because we were too busy talking about Snowpocalypse 2011! I don't know what I'm going to do after the winter is over, and I can't use that anymore. I might tack that on to the end of Chris Reardon Has to Create. We do love our sound effects here. I like this one too.
Bing. Beep 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 beep. Bing.
Yeah. Sound effects are fun. Anyway, getting way off the subject. So what I was saying, okay, scientists are not a dogmatic group. They don't have these teachings that you are forced to believe in order to be a true scientist. You know, that's what religion does, and that's not what science does. So what we have here is we have millions, literally millions of people all around the world looking at the same sets of data. Now, they may be looking at a subset of data, you know, specific on their local area. They may be looking at, you know, the whole kind of uber picture, you know, of kind of global light. And the one thing that is immediately obvious to all of these climatologists, these are not meteorologists. These are not people who predict the weather. These are people who study climate. And there's a very important difference. Climate and weather are not the same thing. This is where a lot of people get hung up, and they just can't seem to wrap their head around this idea that climate and weather aren't the same thing. Climate doesn't change much. Weather is constantly changing. And so when you get the people, you know, say, well, it's climate change, you know, climate changes all the time. Well, it doesn't. Climates are relatively stable. So when climate does change, it's a big deal. And we see this, the effect of this warming. Like I said, glaciers are melting at an increasingly rapid rate all over the globe. I think there's a few areas in South America, you know, Antarctic, maybe, where they're not shrinking rapidly. But these are areas that are always, their climate is, you know, this Arctic climate. We have sea ice melting all over the place. The sea ice doesn't raise the you know, when it melts, it doesn't raise the ocean level, obviously, the displacement and all that. But when you have ice melting on land, that is when the ocean levels rise. And we can see that the Maldives are, in particular, are having a real problem. And there's some other places in the South Pacific where the rising ocean levels. So, you know, global warming is very real to them. They can't say, well, it snowed here last year, so global warming is a myth. You know, they're seeing the effects of it right now. And it's undeniable. There is a scientific consensus among millions of scientists that global warming is actually happening. Now, what is debatable about this? And this is where the real controversy is that there are quite a few scientists who don't believe that people are responsible for it. And this is where all the debate in the scientific community is. Are humans causing that? And if humans are causing it, is there a way to reverse it? And this is what is really debatable, and this is what, you know, this is where the discussion is ongoing, and this is what has not yet been proven absolutely. And I hate to use that term. I know that my good friend Scott Mitchell, he loves to use this idea of, well, you have to be able to prove it absolutely. Science doesn't deal in absolutes. They deal in probabilities. They deal in what is more likely than not to be true. And you have, certainly among these millions of climatologists all over the globe, a consensus that global warming is occurring. Anybody who claims that it's not is delusional, really. Seriously. Because the scientific evidence is so incontrovertible. We know it's occurring. It's just a fact. But what's controversial, of course, is are people causing it? And I'm still willing to be convinced that, you know, that people are not causing it. And of course, obviously, if it's happening, we need to deal with it. And that's more important than trying to lay blame and say, well, you know, it's industrial pollution or, you know, CO2 being pumped into the atmosphere. I think that the jury is still out on a lot of the causes of global warming, but global warming is definitely a fact. Now, there's something else I'm going to bring up. And this is the whole idea of your local weather being evidence against global warming. Now, local weather, like I said, it varies wildly, you know, and every year is going to be different. Doesn't mean that the climate's not changing. For example, give an example here. We've had a fair amount of snow this winter compared to last year. But overall, temperatures have been warmer this year than they were last year. And this is because snow requires a certain temperature range in order to be able to fall. If it's too cold, snow won't fall. If it's too warm, snow won't fall. You'll get rain instead, or sleet. Or slush. We get slush here. It's because I live on the lakefront. Or not, I don't live on the lakefront. I live about a half a block away from the lakefront. So it's essentially the same as living on the lakefront, except I don't have to worry about sand blowing into the house. So this is the kind of the point that I wanted to make. You can't derive your model, scientific model, of something that's happening globally based on a local weather pattern. But here's where it gets a little bit complicated, because people tend to believe the things that they see for themselves in their world. And they see more snow this year and they say, oh gosh, you know, if it's snowing more, that means it's colder and therefore it's not warming, you know. And it's that kind of a bias. And people are not scientifically literate enough to know that more snow can actually mean that it's warmer out, and therefore the warming is occurring. I have another comment here. Wayne is saying, anything with an ology normally is researching the reason why. Science fact. Yeah, sure, absolutely. Though, is psychology researching the reason why we have a brain? I don't know. Could be. I don't know. Incidentally, I see that James Sanders is online. Hello, James. James is going to follow me at 5 o'clock here on United Kingdom Radio. James is, I think, his first show this week. And I'm looking forward to hearing that. James is our youngest presenter. I think he's the youngest presenter we've ever had on here. It would be by a couple of years probably. So looking forward to hearing his first show. So stay tuned after me to listen to young James Sanders here. And it would be fantastic. I didn't listen to Chris's show today. I've been so busy. This has been one of those weeks. It's been one of these crazy, crazy, crazy weeks. And I haven't really had time to prepare anything this week. And there's a lot of things going on, and some of the things I can't talk about, some of the things that I can talk about. Yesterday I was at work till 7 at night. And the reason why is because there is a problem, and we have a deadline, and you know how it goes. And normally when I do most of my show prep is on Friday night, the night before the show. I'd usually do a little bit of it earlier in the week, like Tuesday. I'll do bits and pieces. I usually do Today in History then, which we haven't had for a couple of weeks because we've been too busy chatting about other stuff. It's nice. So I usually do that like on Tuesday or a Wednesday. And then, I go and listen to comments and decide what I'm going to talk about and all that stuff. Usually by Thursday, I have a pretty good idea of what the show is going to be, but not this week. So this week is a good week to call in if you wanted to chat about, global warming, climate change, anything you like. You can call in. If you're in the UK, you can actually phone in at 020-3287-1488, which is a local London number. So if you call it, it's not a premium rate number, but it would cost you the same as if you were calling London. And if you're in the UK, if you're in the US, you can also call that number, but it costs you a lot of money. but of course, if you're listening live, you can call in on Skype. And the Skype address is United Kingdom Radio. So getting back to the global warming thing for a minute. Why do you think that so many people are just hostile to the idea? And honestly, I mean, when the scientific evidence is as clear as it is, and this goes for anything, folks. It's not just global warming. Evolution is another one of these that tends to provoke a strong emotional response in people. They don't want to believe in these scientific conclusions or these scientific theories or whatever, because they have an irrational need to deny it. And when I say irrational, I don't mean insane. I mean that it's not based on reason. And a lot of people operate this way. Like I said, most people are not scientifically literate. They don't have a strong grasp of things, even as basic as what is a theory. And this is something I've definitely talked about before on the show. Because, a theory, in colloquial use, you say, I found this broken glass on the floor. My theory is the cat knocked it off the table. Okay. But that's without any kind of evidence whatsoever. You have a glass, you have a cat, you have a table. Glass gets knocked off the table. There's a good probability that it could have been the cat. Could also may have been that you put it on the edge of the table and it fell down. There's a lot of different of scenarios, but there are certain scientific issues, even ones that have been well established for hundreds of years, that people still have a real problem accepting. And we have this a lot here in the US, and I don't know that it's the same in the UK or similar in the UK, because one of the things that we have here that you don't really have over in the UK is this strong religious fundamentalist tendency that, and you have, we have whole areas of this country that I live in. U.S. is a fairly large country. We have whole, states of this country that essentially deny science every single day. And, a lot of the states are in the South where you have people who are not quite so well educated. The educational systems there are not up to snuff. Wayne is saying, I think some people are hostile to the idea. Also, some companies find it as an excuse to charge more for services It's actually about their greed rather than climate change. Wayne is bringing up something really, really, really important. In a lot of these arguments, oh, don't worry about the spelling, Wayne. Don't. I like to say, if I'm typing in chat with people, I make a lot of misspellings, and you know, usually I hit I instead of O, you know, or I instead of U. Yeah. I like to say I type with an accent, so that's how I. But you know, Wayne is bringing up something really important because there are a lot of people who like to capitalize on both sides of this issue. Now let's specifically talk about global warming here, or climate change. Now, I have to go back for a second because I forgot to talk about this. There's a reason why people don't use the term global warming as often as they used to. Instead, they use the term climate change. The reason why that is because climate change is a more accurate term. Because not every place in the world is going to see warming as the result of climate change. Now, try to wrap your head around this a little bit because this is complicated. Climate and weather are, you know, even though they're not the same thing, are very complex systems. So a change in climate, which is a big deal, but when you have a change in climate, some things can change that maintain certain weather patterns. For example, here on the east coast of the U.S., we have this thing called the Gulf Stream. As a result of global warming, the Gulf Stream is shifting. It's happening slowly, but it is shifting. The Gulf Stream is a current of warm water that goes up the east coast of the United States and across the Atlantic to the UK. What would happen if the Gulf Stream shifts even by a couple of degrees? Well, it could mean that the UK won't be in the path of this warm current. What kind of effect do you think that would have on the UK, and in particular on the UK's weather? Because weather is determined in part by your climate. Climate is not the other way around. Climate is not influenced by weather. Weather is influenced by climate. If you take this warm current away from the UK, you're going to end up with colder winters in the UK and drier winters in the UK. In short, the UK's climate, instead of being as balmy as it is, will become more extreme. It'll get colder in the winter and it'll get hotter in the summer. It'll be more like, you know, somewhere at a similar latitude, like parts of Siberia. So that's a good example of how actually, you know, climate change, global warming, can make a place colder. And that is a fairly complex idea. Now, I'm not being all alarmist about this. You know, I'm not trying to scare anybody. What's going to happen is going to happen. Now, I think that, you know, you can take, you know, a lot of what we can do, you know, if we can do anything at all about it, is pure speculation. What we can do is educate people to be aware of it and to, you know, help people to prepare for, you know, and in the long term, because, you know, the climate change doesn't take place like in a year. You know, this is a long-term process. You're talking about, you know, degrees centigrade of increase over periods of decades. So it's not it's not something that we are going to have to deal with, you know, today or tomorrow. But the change is occurring. And people are going to need to know what to expect. I don't think the state of science education is shockingly bad in the UK or in Europe is as shockingly bad as it is here. Here we actually have a subculture of people who are actually fighting to not teach good science. And they're doing it for religious reasons. And I could go on all day about them, and I won't. I'll do that on some other show, maybe. But of course, you know, I've done many podcasts on this sort of topic. Now, my podcast, It doesn't have as many listeners as the live show, but you can go back and you can listen to the podcast. I've done 102 episodes of Tom Harris USA, and you can go listen to them at tomharrisusa.com. And I started the podcast. I was doing it every 4 days from 2009 until after I started the live show. I was doing both the live show and the podcast. And what had kind of happened around October of 2009 was that I kind of tapered off in my doing of the show, and then I kind of stopped doing it altogether last year. Still do one every once in a while, you know, but it's not mainly what I do now, because you know the podcast has kind of a tiny listenership. But if the things I talk about on this show interest you, then I would highly recommend that you go over to TomHarrisUSA.com, and you can download my podcast and feel free to talk about the topics I talk about here. You know, because I'm certainly willing to go back and you know, revisit old topics, old territory. More than happy to do that. Love hearing from people, of course. And if you want to call in, that's just fantastic. If you want to email the show, you're more than welcome to do that. My email address is tom@unitedkingdomradio.co.uk. Or you can email me at tom@tomharrisusa.com. It goes to the same mailbox. You don't need to worry about it. I do check that mailbox almost every day. It's not absolutely every day, but almost every day. If you send me an email, I'd be more than happy to read it out. And occasionally I'll play out audio clips. I kind of stopped doing that for a while because there were some listeners who kind of complained about them. I don't understand that. I don't understand that, really. I love to get the audio clips, too. But I'm very, very slow to respond if it's not directly related to the show. So I'm going to take just a very, very quick break here, play a couple of trails for you, and I'll be right back.
Hello, Chris Reardon here. I hope you enjoy our shows here at United Kingdom Radio. A bit of fundraising now for the station. If you fancy a bit of music in your life, then why not try one of my weekly non-stop music mixes? All music, no talking. You can get a new one each week and download them from www.chrisreardonshow.co.uk. For just 80 pence UK, that's about $1.30 US, they are over 75 minutes long and contain some of the brand new club tunes around at the moment in the UK. Download them now from www.chrisreardonshow.co.uk. My weekly mixes, just 80 pence. www.chrisreardonshow.co.uk.
United Kingdom Radio have teamed up with a brand new online internet radio music service called
You Love It, We Play It,
aimed at the over 25s and featuring some presenters that present right here on United Kingdom Radio. So if you've had enough of all that rabbit, thank you, Chaz and Dave, then try our brand new music service at www.youloveitweplayit.com.
And don't forget that James Sanders will be following me here on United Kingdom Radio at 5 o'clock. Go listen to James after me. And so we're going to talk a little bit more, just a little bit more now, about this whole climate change thing. Because I think I've kind of shot my proverbial load on this topic at this point. But Wayne brings up something that's kind of important. Now, I'm going to read his comment again. I think some people are hostile to the idea of climate change. Also, as some companies find it's an excuse to charge people more for services, and that is actually more about their greed rather than climate change. Now, I think what Wayne is talking about here is this whole kind of mini industry that sells you things like carbon credits. And this is a common criticism of global warming, anthropogenic climate change, and the kind of climatologists in general. Usually, and I didn't include this in my kind of summary, depending on the person's political persuasion, the argument is that, you know, we see all the scientific evidence, we see all the warming, we know what the scientists say, But it snowed in my neighborhood last year, so climate change isn't happening, and it's all been invented by Al Gore. Usually there's some sort of a snarky comment about Al Gore. It kind of depends on your political persuasion. Now, Al Gore has been a real opportunist here. And it's one of the things that I find distasteful about Al Gore. I don't have anything necessarily against the guy himself. But there are always going to be willing people who are willing to fearmonger. And it's on both sides. It's not just the people who are saying, oh, well, you know, these climate change people, they're just out to make a buck. It's on the other side as well. There are a lot of people out there who want to push a political agenda being supported by the science that's actually there. Oh no, we all need to panic. We need, you know, we need to clean all the carbon out of the environment. We do this by selling carbon credits. I've said before, and I've talked about this on the podcast, you know, buying carbon credits is absolutely unnecessary. It doesn't do any good at all. You can spend $10,000 on carbon credits, and it will not remove one iota of carbon out of the environment. The whole idea of carbon credits, I think, is ridiculous. It's like, I think in one of my podcasts, I compared it to the selling of indulgences. You know, back in the Middle Ages, you could pay the church money so that you wouldn't have to feel guilty for your sins anymore. And I think it's exactly the same with carbon credits. It's a voluntary penalty that you're paying, so you can feel better about yourself. It doesn't help clean up the environment. It doesn't help support. You know, the money that from these carbon credits doesn't generally go to helping actually clean up the environment. It's something you pay to you say, oh, you know, I'm going to go to Whole Foods and I'm going to, you know, buy my $8 mayonnaise, and then I'm going to buy, you know, $10 worth of carbon credits so I can feel better about myself. It's definitely an idea that I have criticized in the past. And there are a lot of people out there who make a lot of money off fear-mongering. And it's not just with global warming, folks. I mean, we have the whole fear industry. And a good example of this is the stuff that's going on with American talk show host Glenn Beck. I don't know if anybody really knows who Glenn Beck is in the UK. And you're better off without him, trust me. But Glenn Beck is a conservative radio and television host who is a conspiracy theorist big time. I don't know why Alex Jones from Prison Planet doesn't sue the pants off of Glenn Beck, because he steals all of his ideas from Alex Jones. And Glenn Beck has this weird mix of sort of, you know, pseudo-Mormon religious teaching and paranoid conspiracy theory far right sort of ideas in what he says. So, you know, his big thing is the coming insurrection. Oh, ooh, 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 ooh. The coming insurrection. I may have just found the jingle's new use. And anyway, so all these people who are kind of plugging this sort of the bad times are coming, folks, you got to get prepared. Emergency preparedness is the name of the game. You know, if you buy gold from us, and if you buy camping supplies from us, and you buy freeze-dried food from us, it'll make things better. There's a whole industry based on this stuff, and unfortunately, I know somebody who, his parents have gotten very, very deep into this scaremongering. And they're buying thousands and thousands of dollars of, quote-unquote, emergency preparedness supplies. And it's all based on their adherence to their, you know, being fans of Glenn Beck. Now, keep in mind, who's Glenn Beck? He's a college dropout. He has no education. He's not intelligent. But he is a, you know, conservative talk show host on a conservative television network, Fox News. And there's a lot of people out there who take what he says very seriously, despite the fact that this guy has absolutely no qualifications to talk about the things he talks about. Is a media personality that a lot of people have gotten pulled in by. You don't really see that on the other side of the political spectrum, though, do you? You can be snarky about carbon credits and Al Gore, but you don't hear the the people on the left. And if anybody knows that any different, they should let me know, because I am more than happy to listen to what people have to say. I'm very open-minded when it comes to being convinced, especially of a political view, because, you know, I have my own political views as well. On social issues, I tend to be fairly, libertarian or liberal, and on other issues, I'm more conservative. But have another... Wayne is saying that he knew I'd get that jingle in again. Yeah, it's too good a jingle not to use, I have to say. But... the scaremongering about the coming insurrection, I think there's a few of these conspiracy theorists out there. It's, you know, like I said, Alex Jones is one of them. He's the one that really plugs this stuff, you know, and that's why I say, you know, he should sue Glenn Beck, because he's kind of stealing his shtick. But, you know, there's a number of things that they sell, and they get a lot of money for selling these things. One of them is that they're telling everyone, buy gold. That's going to save you if you buy gold. The other thing is buying, you know, food and emergency supplies and, you know, all these survive, because, you know, the kind of their notion is that, you know, all of our civilization is going to collapse any day now. Glenn Beck likes to say the American Constitution is hanging by a thread. You know why he's saying that, folks? It has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with the Mormon religion, of which he is a member. The elders of Israel, which is to say, you know, the patriarchs, the biblical patriarchs, plus Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and the other leaders of the Mormon church, are supposed to rise from the dead and save America when our Constitution is, quote-unquote, hanging by a thread. This was in the teachings of Joseph Smith. So... this is something that is firmly based. The language that he uses and the illustrations that he uses are firmly based in the Mormon religion. And the people, I think most people who listen to Glenn Beck aren't Mormon. They have no idea that when he shouts about the Constitution hanging by a thread, it's an appeal to these mythical elders of Israel, including Joseph Smith, that it's time for them to come back. Glenn Beck is trying to get the Mormon elders to rise from the dead and save America, according to his own weird idea. And, you know, people are willing to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, in support of this idea. And it's stupid. I don't mind saying it's idiotic. If you want to be prepared for a natural disaster, be prepared for a natural disaster. You know, but do it in a reasonable way. You know, the quote-unquote, you know, the great insurrection or whatever the hell it's like, there is no evidence that this is going on. This is pure and simple fear-mongering. Trying to whip people up into an emotional frenzy. When people get whipped up into an emotional frenzy, they are very suggestible. You can get them to do almost anything. This was something that I commented on back in, you know, 2001, 2002, right after 9/11. Americans were whipped up into an emotional frenzy, and for good reason. But it was that emotional frenzy that allowed the neoconservatives to drive us into war with Iraq, a country that had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. And you can look back at, you know, and of course this was predicted. Actually, this is a real good example. Scott Mitchell was saying on his show a while ago. And I've completely lost my train of thought. Sorry, I was distracted momentarily and just completely lost it. No, but what Scott was saying, you were talking about, you know, people were being whipped up in this frenzy. But, you know, looking back on people's past behavior, there were signs that this was going to happen. And I think on Scott's last show, he was talking about, you know, how he thinks that skeptics would be more easily fooled by a real conspiracy because skeptics tend not to believe that any conspiracies are true. That's not true. But what Scott is sort of expecting is for skeptics to act like they're not skeptics. He's asking skeptics to jump to conclusions based on incomplete evidence, which is sort of the opposite of what skeptics do. And I can remember back in 2000, before Bush was even elected, kind of chatting with a good friend of mine who works for the FBI. And he was saying, you know, if Bush gets elected, you can expect Iraq to be invaded. And I said, well, yeah, well tell me about that. Why do you think that? Now, this wasn't a conspiracy theory. This is based on the political writings and the political inclinations of the people surrounding Bush. People like Don Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, the whole neocon crowd, Dick Cheney, you know, they belong to this organization called the I think it's called the Council for the New American Century, an organization which condoned the invasion of Iraq. That was their history. That was one of their pet causes. So when these people get in power, what do you expect they're going to do? They're going to follow their pet cause. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's looking at the evidence and saying, okay, this is something that they might do based on their past history. And that's as close to conspiracy theorizing as most skeptics are going to get. Wayne is saying, Tom, those people aren't, oh damn, those people aren't in the Book of Revelation, another driving fear book. Who knows what the Book of Revelation is? It's an interesting book, I have to say. You know, the Book of Revelation, and I suppose most of you are aware of the Book of Revelation. It's the last book of the Bible. It talks about, you know, dragons rising up out of the ocean and multi-breasted whores and all this wonderful stuff. Lovely imagery. You gotta love the imagery. The moon turning into blood. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, turning into blood and raining down onto the earth. Yeah, that's going to happen. You know, and a lot of people take the Book of Revelation very seriously. Now, I don't know that the Book of Revelation can really be interpreted any particular way. Every generation sees what they want to see in the Book of Revelation. This is all going back to the whole idea that I've talked about on my podcast many, many, many times about you know, people making patterns out of things. Like you look at a cloud and it looks like a duck. You know, and everybody can kind of see something different. And after a few minutes, that might look different because, you know, you look at something that's not very well defined. It's something like the predictions or the prophecy in the Book of Revelation. It's not really prophecy. If you read the Book of Revelation, you know, it doesn't say necessarily that these are prophetic, but that's what people read into it. Mystical writings are like that. It's such a difference from the, you know, sort of the old mythology. You know, talking about Norse mythology is something that something I have a keen interest in. You know, where you have your stories and you have your adventures of the heroes and the gods and all that stuff, and they act very much like people. You know, they're definitely, you know, patterned after, you know, what people are familiar with, because that allows them to identify with the characters. And you have, you know, people like Zeus. You know, Zeus's thing was that he was horny. You know, Thor's thing that he was strong and he had a nasty temper. You know, Hercules, again, you know, he's strong. You do amazing things, you know. But stuff like the Book of Revelation, you know, isn't that so much different, though? Because everybody reads whatever they want to in the Book of Revelation. It's like Nostradamus, and you know, Nostradamus, who I don't know, I don't understand what people see in Nostradamus, I'll be quite honest with you, because Nostradamus, you know, lived hundreds of years ago. He made a lot of really, really vague predictions. I mean, so vague that if you look at, you know, books about Nostradamus, you can interpret these things any way you want. They're applicable to any situation because they're so vague. And what's really kind of funny is that, you know, you have this whole industry now that's kind of built up around trying to out Nostradamus Nostradamus. And you have the these so-called mediums and clairvoyants and all these people. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. I mean, they make as general a prediction as possible and hope that it comes as close to true that they can convince the people who follow them that they're some kind of they have some kind of power. I've talked about psychics a lot. I'm not going to talk about them now. But Wayne is saying, I normally see food in the clouds. I think it's mood related. I love it. Oh, I have a jingle for that too.
I love it.
There we go. It's funny, you know, because I used to, when I was a kid, growing up in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, used to lay on my back and look at the sky and look at the clouds. I love to do that. You know, and I still, you know, here I don't do it so much, you know, because being, well, I'm a grown up now, you know. I just don't have the time. I don't have the time to lay out and look at clouds the way I used to back when I was a kid. But, you know, it is neat. It is neat. And especially when I'm traveling by boat or by plane and I don't have anything else to do. And if it's a nice clear day and you have, you know, big poofy clouds, and yeah, I love to do that. Yeah. And I understand totally why people, especially, you know, people who didn't have a lot of education, people who were very ignorant of the world around them, which is to say, you know, people back in the old days, people back in the Stone Age or the Iron Age, you know, would see significance in the patterns of the clouds, or in the patterns of a goat's entrails, or in the, you know, the leaves and the bottom of a teacup, you know, and I can understand what people find appealing about that, but I don't, being a skeptic and being somebody who tries as much as possible to be rational, and I realize that there are some topics on which I'm not rational. You know, I try not to live my life that way, though, because I don't think that it's about wiping out irrationality. It's not, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not saying that we should wipe out religion just because I'm not religious, or that we should, you know, eliminate psychics from the face of the earth because I see them as ripoff artists that they are. You know, but it's about educating people. It's about making people think about what they believe. And by doing so, there are always going to be some people who are intelligent, observant, perceptive people who are going to realize, oh my God, he's right. Or she's right, depending on who's talking. Maybe I shouldn't be spending $1,000 on emergency supplies for this upcoming Mormon apocalypse. You know, It's all about education, and it's all about sharing ideas. And once again, if you want to call into the show, please feel free to do so. We have a few minutes left. I can take calls for about another 5 minutes. If anyone wants to call in and chat, then they should feel free to do so. In the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do Today in History. I haven't had done this for a couple of weeks. It's kind of cool. February 26th in history. In 1797, the Bank of England issued the first pound note. In 1848, Karl Marx and Joseph Engels published the Communist Manifesto. Big day for national parks today. In 1919, Acadia National Park in Maine was formed as Lafayette National Park. That's the state of Maine here in the U.S. For those of you who don't know where Maine is, far northeast corner of the United States. It looks like a little head on the U.S. In 1919, Congress formed the Grand Canyon National Park in Arizona. Beautiful park. I've never been to Acadia, but I have been to the Grand Canyon. And it is spectacular. 1929, President Calvin Coolidge of the U.S. established Grand Teton National Park. I think it's in, is that North Dakota? South Dakota? North Dakota? I don't know. It's up there in the Dakotas. In 1936, Adolf Hitler introduced Ferdinand Porsche's new automobile, the Volkswagen. Yes, the same Volkswagen. designed to be a car that your ordinary person could afford, and that it has remained that for many, many years. 1952, Prime Minister Winston Churchill announced that Great Britain now has its own atomic bomb. 1962, U.S. Supreme Court disallowed race separation on public transportation. So you weren't allowed to separate blacks from whites on public transportation anymore. 1962. 1977, the first flight of a space shuttle. This was actually on top of a Boeing 747. That was Space Shuttle Enterprise, incidentally, the one that never went into space. 1983, Michael Jackson's album Thriller went to number one and stayed number one for the next 37 weeks. That's a long time. 1984, Pulitzer Prize winning poet Robert Penn Warren was named the first United States Poet Laureate. 1987, the Tower Commission was convened to probe into the Iran-Contra affair. I talked about that a few shows ago, where the Reagan administration broke the law multiple ways by selling Iran arms in exchange for hostages and taking the money and giving it to the Contras, who were these mercenaries that were fighting against the government of Nicaragua. 1990, the USSR agreed to withdraw all 73,000 troops that they had in the Czech Republic by July of 1991. In 1993, the first New York City Trade Center bombing occurred, second tallest building in the world at the time. Seven people died in the bombing, which did superficial damage in the parking garage of the World Trade Center. 1998, Oprah Winfrey won her lawsuit against the Texas cattlemen. Oprah Winfrey had made some comments about eating beef that beef industry didn't like, and they sued her, and she won. Famous birthdays on February 26th include, in 1802, Victor Hugo, the author of The Hunchback of Notre Dame and Les Misérables. I played Victor Hugo on stage back in 2001, and it was the best play I ever did. I loved it. A play called Les Trois Dumas. In 1845, Alexander III, Tsar of Russia, was born in St. Petersburg. In 1846, Buffalo Bill Cody was born in Davenport, Iowa. A well-known Wild West show went all over the world, including in the UK back in the 19th century. That's Buffalo Bill Cody, born in 1846. In 1893, William Frawley was born, character actor, best known for playing Fred Mertz on I Love Lucy back in the 1950s, and Uncle Bub on My Three Sons back in the 1960s. In 1908, Warner Brothers animator Tex Avery was born, one of the grand old men of Warner Brothers Animation, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and all that. 1918, Theodore Sturgeon, sci-fi writer, was born, wrote for the original Star Trek, among other things. 1920, Tony Randall, the actor, was born, Leonard Rosenberg in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Tony Randall being best known for his role as Felix on The Odd Couple. 1928, Antoine Fats Domino was born, rhythm and blues pianist. Notice I said pianist. In 1931, Robert Novak, news reporter from Evans and Novak, was born in Joliet, Illinois, not too far from here. 1932, Johnny Cash was born in Kingsland, Arkansas. Good old Johnny Cash. 1945, rocker Mitch Ryder of Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels was born. And in 1953, Michael Bolton was born in Connecticut. And that is Today in History. All right. So we're coming up right up to the end of the show now. I guess we're not going to get any calls today, but that's fine. Yeah, we have to have a nice quiet show every once in a while. Now, next week is going to be a travel show. I'm trying to do these travel shows about every third show, and as long as people keep saying they like them, I'm going to keep doing them. So if you don't like them, let me know. You know, but of course, you know, if you do like them, let me know that too. Our next travel show next week is going to be about Finland, and I've already started doing a little bit of work. It's a country I've been to, I think, five times. And so it is definitely something that I'll be interested in. I might go two parts on it. Don't know. We'll talk about Finland next week. And going to go ahead and got to start wrapping it up here. So you can listen next week. Of course, I'm here every week. Don't forget to listen to James Sanders, who's following me here at 5 o'clock. Going to go ahead and close out the show now. Thanks very much for listening to the program. I'll listen to James next. Talk to you next week. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, signing off.
I love it.
Don't cut me off.
James.
What a load of old twaddle that is!